So tell me about yourself. So you played ball, right?
Uh-huh.
Who'd you play for?
So a quick little overview for me, man. I'm from a place called Waynesboro, Georgia. Okay. A small town, like literally probably 30 minutes away from Augusta, Georgia, where they have a master's at.
Yeah, I know Augusta. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I went to a high school called Burke County. I played basketball there. It's kind of like the little, you know, town like star, so to speak. I left from there. I became an All-American playing there, played for the Junior National Olympics and all the other stuff, like playing basketball-wise, right?
Oh, me blow me life.
I'm Jamie Britt.
And I'm Heath Britt.
And together we are E14. We have 40 years of naval service.
And each week we discuss a potpourri of topics, which we like to call smoke pit topics.
These are real world topics that concern us, our marriage, and our Navy with a sailor twist.
So join us each week
as we dive into the deep end.
Booyah.
Welcome, everybody, back to the E14 podcast. Today, sitting here, it's just me, Heath Britt. Jamie's picked up chief, so she's doing her chief stuff, chief selectee stuff. So it's just me today, and I'm joined today by Devonte Lewis. Before we get started, though, I want to just a little disclosure. The views and opinions of this show does not reflect the views and opinions of the United States Navy or the United States military or Devonte's command. So, Devonte, hey, welcome to the show, man.
Man, thank you for having me, man. Thank you.
Our pleasure, brother. Hey, tell us a little about yourself, my man.
I'm from Waynesboro, Georgia, known as Burke County area. Like I said, it's like 45 minutes maybe from Augusta area where they have the Masters. I played basketball throughout high school, left from there as an All-American. Joined to go play basketball in South Carolina, and then left from there to join the Navy. And then I did two deployments while I was stationed in San Diego on the DDG-102, the USS Sampson. I helped recover bodies like from plane crashes, the Air Asia plane crash. And also while I served, I ended up playing basketball for the Navy as well. And so I played for the All-Navy basketball team. We beat the Air Force that year for the first time in a while. And I ended up meeting the coach of the Spurs, which is Greg Popovich.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how my professional career started. He, you know, informed me of things of playing in the summer league and playing at different pro workouts and things like that. And so I left from playing there. And then I ended up going to the NBA draft.
Wow.
While I was on deployment. So I was selected to enter the draft, and then wasn't able to go to the workouts because clearly I was on deployment. But right. When I came back, I ended up going to work out with the Sacramento Kings for their last roster spot. And they ended up picking Seth Curry, which is Steph Curry's brother, which he was the MVP of the development league that year anyway. So I was like, yeah, I just got off a ship and he was in the league already. So yeah, nah, his name Curry already. So
right. I kind of lost Curry. That Hey, man. Hey, that's good company, though.
Yeah, it is. It's great company. You know, they had Rajon Rondo that year, Darren Collison, Rudy Gay, DeMarcus Cousins. Yeah, they had a great squad that year. And ultimately, I was able to end up going to try to play on their development team, which is the Reno Bighorns. But I ended up making more money playing in Italy. So the Navy ended up letting me get out on early outs to go pursue my career playing basketball professionally. And so I played in Italy. And then I would come back and forth. I stayed like home based in San Diego. And I would come back and forth. I would go play. I played in Canada. I played in Mexico. I played in Japan. And then I ended up coming back to San Diego. And then I graduated from National University using my GI Bill. The Navy really paid off greatly. And then I played in Rochester for a while. And then I ultimately ended up coming to Missouri because I hadn't seen my family in like 10 years with all that traveling and everything going on. And my brother was a pastor here. My mom moved here to help him out. And I ended up getting a phone call because my coach was supposed to go get a job working for the Nets. And so I thought I was going to have an opportunity to work out for those guys. And then he got a call to go take a USA team to China. And so he called me. He's like, "Hey, man, what you doing?" He called me D-Lou. He's like, "D-Lou, what you doing?" I was like, "Man, you know, I'm over here in Missouri." And so he was like, "Man, you want to go to China?" I was like, "Sure." And so I got a Chinese visa and went and played with the USA team that year. And nice. Then after that, we actually had our own little team. And we played in China as well and then won a championship with those guys. And then I ended up coming back to the States and, you know, pretty much working with a nonprofit coach here at a high school. And I'm also a prior service recruiter here in the area. Once I got back into the reserves, and it was like kind of like a golden opportunity for me because my biggest thing was to give back and to help the youth as well. Nice. So I kind of do a list of a whole bunch of different things, man. And that's kind of where we are today.
Holy shit. You've done more traveling with basketball than you did in the damn Navy.
Yeah. For a fact.
That's crazy. That's crazy. So, when you played around the globe, not counting America, what's the biggest competition as far as basketball? Which country?
China would have to be the biggest. Wow. Because I would say, so what usually happens, so you got the NBA, yep. And then China is the next biggest league because the players that I was going against were NBA players. So it's like most NBA players, if they don't make it into the NBA or like they get cut or whatever the case, they usually go play in China.
So China has a lot of Americans playing for them.
Most definitely. So you at least have two import players. So it's two Americans usually or two like NBA players on each team. And if they're on that team, they got to probably score like 30 points or they go and get sent home.
Wow. Wow. Damn. It's a good competition then.
Yeah, it is for a fact.
Well, we're getting into, so everybody knows, we started this new series and you're the first, really the first episode, the first guest we have on since we took our little break when we were moving up here to Pennsylvania. Uh-huh. So we're doing like inspirational leadership, building a team and playing across the globe like yourself, playing with language barriers like yourself. I can't imagine trying to play in a team that most people, English is not their primary language, Chinese, Italian, what have you. What is the key, man? That started in high school. I'm sure you were the team captain, right, at one time? Scoring, yeah, you know, you're all American. So, what is your idea when you're trying to get a team together? What you have a philosophy?
So when you building a team, right? Obviously, every team needs a leader, right? So that's the biggest part. Like you got to have a leader, right? And that leader got to embody your vision for the team, right? So like with basketball, we could say you have player coaches, right? Mm-hmm. So you have like most times the general on the court is the point guard. So that's the guy that sees the floor. He sees everything. He puts everybody in the position to be where they're supposed to be in order to succeed. And so as a like having a team, you need that one person at least that sees the same vision as you in order for everything to work perfectly. And then the rest of the people are kind of like interchangeable. So like you got to have somebody that's going to have the heart of the team, right? So you might not, they might not be the strongest person or the best person or whatever the case in any situation, business, whatever the case, but they got a heart for whatever you're trying to do. So they see the vision and they follow the lead of the leader, right? Mm-hmm. And so when you're building a team, you have that, man. And when you have that, the rest kind of just flows. It flows naturally, in my opinion.
Right. And I always found myself like you got to be almost like a hype man.
Yeah.
You got to be a hype man, and you can't, no matter how tired you are, wore out, you can't drag ass.
Right.
You got to have more energy than everybody else. You got to come in most motivated. And that's tough.
Yeah.
That's the hard thing to do, especially you got to – everybody has their bad days, and everybody comes to work or whatever, play ball or whatever it is, pissed off sometimes. It's hard. It's hard to put that stuff down. So when you went to college – and let's go to college. So you were an All-American in high school, correct?
Uh-huh.
And you played guard.
Yep.
Okay.
So shooting guard, small forward.
Right. Right. How tall are you?
I'm 6'4".
So you're a pretty tall guy. Pretty tall.
Average height.
Yeah. Yeah. For a ball player, I guess you're short. But
right.
For normal people like us, you're a pretty tall guy. So when you went to college, you had the hype, All-American High School. You got a full ride, right?
Yep.
What was it like? What was the atmosphere like when you walked in?
So, like, as an athlete, man, you go into different, like, you go into different scenarios, right? So everybody that's going to college, chances are they were the man wherever they was at, right?
Right.
So
right.
It's like you got to start over and you got to prove yourself, right? And a lot of times people games and even in life, like transitioning, you don't transition well most times, right? Because now you got to start all the way back over. You don't get that same hype that you had all before, right?
Right.
Unless I'm like you like it's just a whole lot to it. So you have to be mentally tough and strong to be able to start over and still be the same person you were like before you got there.
Right.
And so for me, it was the grind, right? So it was, I got to outwork everyone here, right? And if they were doing this, I got to do this plus some, you know, mm-hmm. in order to put me ahead of everybody else, because my competition is going to work just as hard to be even greater, right? So in my opinion, my whole dream was to play professional basketball. I came from a town where matter of fact, I think I probably was the first person to leave from my town to go play professional basketball. And my town was a football town, like the South is football. So anytime you come out and you play basketball, it's like, bro, yeah, you play basketball, but you're probably really not going to go nowhere. You end up being a coach somewhere, and that's it. You're not going to go pro, right? So for me, I always had that drive to do that. So I've always been driven, and I feel like my college career, high school, professional, I was always driven to go harder than everyone else, no matter the situation, no matter where I came from or where I was at. And that's how I became successful. And that was the key.
So in college, you started out the bottom of the barrel like everybody does. You clawed pretty hard. When did you get really noticed, do you think?
So as far as in college or like high school-wise?
Yeah, college.
So college-wise, I really felt like, because I was dealing with a lot of, like, you know, my kid being born and everything of that. So it was just like my focus wasn't where it should have been, like a regular college student, right? Mm-hmm. So it was more of me focusing on trying to be an adult and growing up fast, right? So like me and my coach, we were okay, we were good. But then he also knew like I was dealing with a whole lot more, right? Mm-hmm. So when it came to that time and that time frame of dealing with stuff and trying to play basketball and balance school and all of that other stuff at the same time and trying to work. So that was the thing. Like I did all these different things while I was trying to come up. And so that was one of the biggest things for me. So he was like, you understood or whatever the case. And I worked my butt off and then I ended up leaving because I couldn't really balance everything.
Right.
Because it was like I had to deal with it. And then once I had my daughter, I ended up switching to going to school in Denmark. Right. So Denmark was closer to my hometown. And when I went there is when, so it was a crazy story behind that. When I left, I had a friend of mine. I ended up taking him to a workout with me, and we both, I took him to the workout and I was like, hey man, you know, the coach wanted me to play or whatever the case, I'm going to take you with me. And he was like, cool, or whatever, I'll go. And the coach offered to sign me, and I told him I'll come here if he takes my friend as well. So he signed me and my friend, and we ended up going there. And we did well there. We did real well in Denmark. And from there, it was just like I started transitioning from thinking going pro to dealing with like everyday life to be a successful dad, you know. And I was different trying to balance that as a kid, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, yeah. I was 20, you know, 21, 20 or whatever. But it's still, I was a kid mentally. I wasn't where I should have been.
Yeah. I mean, we're dudes. It takes us a lot longer to get to think like grown men.
Right.
And then you join the Navy, man. So you join the Navy as quartermaster, which isn't the, I mean, quartermaster, my buddies, I got a lot of buddy quartermasters. But the cool thing is you were search and rescue, right?
So I do search and rescue, search and recovery. Yeah, I was a part of that.
You talk about teamwork.
Yeah.
Tell me about that, because everything is synchronized, right? I mean, everybody knows their part.
Yeah.
So you talk about Asian Air?
So it's Air Asia.
Air Asian, yeah. Air Asian. You actually pulled up some, unfortunately, dead bodies from that encounter. So tell me about, was that an evening time? What day of the time? What What part of the day did that happen?
Actually, that was New Year's. So literally New Year's had came in. I'm trying to think exactly. I want to say 2014-ish, maybe 13. I'm not sure of the exact year. But I remember it was New Year's. And I was literally getting off of a 2 to 7 watch. So usually what would happen is, you know, you stay on your watch. So 2 a.m., 7 a.m., you get off and you go to your rack and go to sleep.
You're doing that 6 on, 6 off shit?
Yep. So you would try to go take a nap. But the thing is, we had got message reports or whatever saying that, you know, a plane had went down in our area. And I was standing watching. So they were like, hey, you know, we use something called VMS, which is Voyage Management System. So it's essentially like a TomTom on the screen.
We can say, right.
A navigation system. Mm-hmm. And so I had input a box, which we usually call like night steam boxes. So we would stay within the parameters of that box at night or whatever. But they wanted me to put a box in the area of where I thought the plane might have went down, and you know, we might find like anything. Because the biggest thing we was trying to find was the black box.
Right.
And so I made a box literally of that area where it should be. And then they sent out the helo to kind of like oversee what was going on. And then unfortunately, it started to see, you know, debris and remains rise up in that area. And we went all ahead towards that area.
Wow. Did you get in the water?
So that is the biggest thing about it. I did not have to go out here and like literally grab the bodies myself. Right. Like from. So we had, I had to stand pretty much lookout, if that's a better thing to say for it, because I was on the bridge as watch standard, but I also located the area of the bodies or whatever. And then, so what happens in the Navy, right, is when your swimmers, your SAR swimmers and all of that, like they jump out the helos or whatever, they let them get out or whatever, they go into the water. And you have the ribs and everything going to the water as well. And if a shark is in the water while you're in the water, the Navy is trained to help you go out peacefully.
Yeah, yeah. Shoot you so you die in peace.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And so the pressure of that it was on my shoulders. Imagine. So it was, hey, you know, Are they good to go? And I actually got a friend of mine, the guy, Jeff the guy, he was known for punching the shark. So he was pulling up a remain or whatever the case in the water, and the shark was attached to it, and he jumped up and he punched him in his nose, and the shark actually went back in the water. So it was crazy. So yeah, man. So essentially being a part of it, man, was great. As far as the teamwork that it took to make it happen, to bring closure to the families as well. And like I said, it was an instrumental thing because it led us to go into Indonesia, in Jakarta, which is where ISIS started at. And yeah. So we were the first ship to pretty much have a whole ceremony and be able to go in. And so I got to stay in the hotel where the president stayed and everything. So it was pretty great.
That's cool. Yeah. So you joined, when did you originally join the Navy as a quartermaster?
In 2011.
Okay, 2011 you joined. Uh-huh. Then you got out, came back in. Now you're recruiting, right?
Yeah.
So you're, what do you call it, a prior service recruiter?
Yep. So I get guys that used to be in branches or in other branches and help them get into the Navy Reserve.
Have you seen, and I'm not, you know, I'm proud Navy vet. I did 26 years. But have you seen from when you came in 10, 11 years ago to now, do you see the teamwork aspect? Is it better? Is it worse or the same?
So I think versus when I first came in, I feel like when I first came in, it was more teamwork driven, right? Now I feel like it's more, you know, teamwork based on departments, if that makes sense.
Gotcha.
So, like, if you're in ops, then the people in the op department, they kind of gel together, but not really gel with the whole ship, if that makes
sense. Right, gotcha, gotcha. Yeah. I gotcha. So, like, yeah, and you were part of ops, right, most of the time? Yeah. And the combat systems have their click, engineering has their click, everybody has their click, and they're tight with them, but they don't want to branch out of that. Yeah. Why do you think that is?
Because I feel like, honestly, it's like if you kind of look out for your own versus the whole big picture of the whole entire ship. And I feel like you worry about your own because you feel like other people may can't offer you as much, depending on whatever you're doing. So the crazy thing about all this is I started out undesignated, right? So I didn't just come in as a quartermaster. I came in as an undesignated seaman. And I ended up striking quartermaster after I was going to be a chaplain bodyguard. it's crazy how all this stuff works. But I was unable to go be a chaplain bodyguard because of my daughter. So I couldn't take her to be in Afghanistan and all of that.
Right.
But I went through everything to be a chaplain's bodyguard. They sent them out. I did the interviews and everything. But ultimately, I ended up being a quartermaster at the end. But being with the bosun's mate as undesignated seaman, I kind of learned to be cool with everybody, right? Because that was my thing always, right? Always treat everybody equally. Always look out for people as much as you can. Because at the end of the day, especially being on the ship, my biggest thing, I was a part of the Heritage Committee as well, is that you never know, like, if you would need someone or the person next to you, no matter the race, color, creed, department, whatever. Because literally, if toxic gas is let go in a space, right, or in birthing, and you're in there sleep on late sleepers, and the person that don't like you is the only person that's in there that can save you.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I look at things differently, and that's how I look at life, man. And so that taught me to always, you know, treat everybody equally. And always look out for everybody, no matter the department. So I was cool with everybody on my ship.
So you wanted to be a chaplain bodyguard. You mean RP?
Yep, I was
RP. You wanted to stack bodies for the Lord?
Yep, that's it.
Stacking bodies for the Lord.
That's it.
That'd have been a cool job.
Yeah, man. I had some time with the Marines too at Camp Pendleton.
Oh, really? Wow. Yep. Nice. Yeah. So I want to go back to you playing ball over the globe real quick. So let's talk about Italy, China, anywhere else in Europe or anywhere else overseas?
So, man, I played China, Italy. I played in Japan for a little while.
Yeah.
Where else? I mean, I played in Canada, Mexico.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So I played a lot of different places, man.
Now, out of all those teams, I mean, you got a lot to choose from. Mm-hmm. Who had the best, like, teamwork, you think? Which country?
In China.
Why is that? What did they do different?
So it was just like we ate, slept, breathed the same sound. Like, it was like one band, one sound, that concept. It was like, if I go left, like, they know what I'm about to do before I do it. Because it was a difference. Like, it's like basketball. It flew. It flowed naturally. And it was like, I never, like, we ran plays or whatever, but it's kind of like we never really had to because we already know what we was doing.
Holy shit. So it was like y'all were a robot, almost programmed.
Yep. And it just went naturally. Like, it's like, you know, when you have cars drive itself and do whatever it's supposed to do.
Right.
Yeah, you got to tell them, man. Yeah.
Were the people over there, as far as the players, very disciplined?
Yes. Most definitely disciplined.
Okay. Where's the most lackadaisy teamwork? The ones that maybe they didn't really know what they were doing or just didn't practice great teamwork?
Probably, I would say Italy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I can see that.
Yeah. It was different because it was like everybody wanted to be individuals there.
They wanted to be, everybody wanted to be the star, right?
Yeah. Everybody wanted to be individuals. So it was never like when you put a group of players together that were like good players or great players or whatever, then it's hard to be like, okay, this, you know what I'm saying? Like it didn't flow as well as it should have because everybody wanted to be individuals. Yeah. And when you try to be individuals and a concept when it's supposed to be team first, it don't really work too well.
Yeah, definitely. That's definitely, I can definitely see that. I lived in Italy. I'm not surprised.
Yeah, man.
Let's talk about inspiration, man. Inspiration. People that are inspirational. So who in your mind, that people you played with, just when you think, wow, that was an inspirational guy or gal or whatnot, like in your, whether it be the Navy, basketball, that.
So what was my, who was my inspiration?
So a team leader or a leader in the military, leader in basketball, you look at them or they act, they're like, they inspire you. You know, they make you want to go, you know, score 40 points or be the best team player you can be or whatever in the Navy. You know, is there somebody in the Navy that made you want to be the best QM or the best sailor you can be? Who inspired you?
As far as the Navy wise, I would have to say, dang, that's tough. That's tough. Navy wise, who inspired me? I'm going to say my oldest brother inspired me as far as being in the Navy, because my oldest brother was actually in the Navy, right?
Oh, yeah.
But he was in the Navy like years ago. Like, I think they ended up like letting him get out because he had flat feet type of thing. Like, he's way older than you. Yeah, way older. My oldest brother almost 50, I think, right now.
Okay.
Yeah, so he was in way back in the days. And he was in the Navy first, actually. Actually, when I was going through trying to figure out what to do and all these other things, like, I had my second oldest brother was like, yeah, man, you should go do, you know, join the Navy or whatever. But I sat down and talked to my oldest brother, and I asked him what worked for him and what didn't work for him. And, you know, like, my inspiration comes from other people's failures. If that makes sense.
That makes sense.
So I learned how to be who I am to people, fail at what they were doing.
Right.
And that showed me what not to do and what to do, honestly. And then as far as basketball, I have one coach, man, Ricky Benitez. Coach Benitez had been around for a while. Coach Benitez, he was actually in the Army as well. So we kind of connected with the military stuff. He's won championships in so many different countries. And he was really one of my guys. Like, if he wanted me to go through a brick wall for him, I'm going. They'd be like, hey, man, I need you to do this today. I don't mind. I'm going to do it. Whatever he needed from me. Because he was inspirational throughout my process of even becoming a professional athlete.
Wow. Where'd you meet him at?
So I actually met him. So remember when I told you I met Greg Popovich or whatever the case? I was playing for the Navy. So he told me about different places to go and combines and pro exposure camps. So I ended up meeting Coach Benitez in Florida. When I went down for a exposure camp, I think it was at UCF, I was down there playing, and then he just took a liking to me, and always got my information. And even then, when I was going, I was still in the Navy, so I was unable to be signed to anybody. It's just that coach just looked out for me and kept my information and stayed in touch with me the whole entire time. So a lot of the times when I got opportunities to go play different places, was because of him.
So when he was your coach at times, right? Mm-hmm. He actually coached you, and you and your teammates, you know, in the locker room, they're talking. What did he do? Was he pumped up?
So yeah, all the time. Like, so he was one of those coaches. Like, in the middle of the night, he's going to text you, like, just to see where your mind is, like, to make sure you're mentally ready. Like, he was going to text you first thing in the morning and be like, you know, He'll send a million emojis, but he also sent a message with it. Like, he really would. He was like one of those guys. And like, he was different, but he always made sure you was ready, right? And always kept it real with you, right? So he would tell you what you need to do and what you weren't doing, and you would respect it, you know? So, because he earned that respect, right? So it's like, I could take whatever he's saying, and he had everybody on the same sheet of music at all times.
Nice. Nice. I can see that. I mean, there's people that I've met through life that, you should have been a chief in the Navy or something, you know,
right.
Things like that. Cause I think of like Tony Dungy, who played who was a coach for the Colts back in the day, you know.
Uh-huh.
Oh man, that dude I read some of his quotes and heard uh-huh. him. I was like, damn, he'd have made a hell of a chief. I think there's a few people mm-hmm. that I've met through my life that I was like, God dang. But there's a lot of people in the Navy I met that inspired. I had a CMC once, man. He made me want to go take on Al Qaeda by myself. This dude was just like a pump me up. He was crazy, man. He was crazy, but it was good, man. He was intense. And I've always liked that. I always said, like, I think my best leader in the Navy would have been a mix between Gunny Highway, you know, Clint Eastwood, Patton, and Stone Cold Steve Austin. That'd have been like the gift. If I mixed those into like one person, I'd been a badass thumb bitch. I wouldn't mind working for him. He might beat my ass every day, but it'd be fun getting my ass kicked by him.
Right, for a fact.
That intensity always pumps me up, man. Always gets me ready to go. I love intensity. I've always tried to be kind of intense too for that reason, because, you know, I think the biggest thing I tried to do when I was still in the Navy was just maintain intensity at all times, because people gravitate to it. Nobody gravitates to a deadbeat, a slouch.
Right.
You know, they want somebody that's always tell you what's on their mind and very frank. You know, that's what I always try to be. And it seemed to work out for me. Okay. But, how old are you?
I'm 32 now.
32. You lived a lifetime.
Yeah.
Young man, lived a lifetime. Wow. So you quit paying, you kind of quit, went to a different school because your daughter, right?
Yeah.
So how's everything going with your family? Good?
Man, everything is great, man. I have no complaints. Like, in life, like, it's like you go through times, right? Up and down, flows, ebbs, and everything. And so now I have two daughters. I have a 12-year-old and I have a 10-year-old. And for me, man, life could not be better. I have the greatest relationships, you know what I'm saying, with my kids. Like, everything is great. Like, the time they would probably never understand all this that I had to sacrifice to get to this point. But ultimately, it was all worth it once I'm here in this stage that I'm in now in life.
So what kept you going, man?
Man, honestly, as crazy as it sounds, my mom, like, so I skipped a part of the story, man. So, like, even going through high school, my high school time wasn't even the easiest, right? So I was this all-American basketball guy, this great basketball player, but I had to deal with my mom being sick throughout my time. Of even going to school, right? So at an early age, I had to deal with her, you know, not being able to work and being sick and having to have surgeries and different things of that nature. So it was like my whole life has been like a constant battle, uphill battle, right? So you talk about the motivations and you talk about, you know, the inspirations. Literally, when you go through so much in life, man, you literally understand that you can take inspiration and motivation from the smallest things, right? So just getting up every day and it's a good day is motivation, right? And it's inspiration. And when you take that at an early age, because this started when I was 15, right? So 15-year-old kid in high school trying to figure it out. I was working at 15, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Playing basketball, going to school. I literally did that my whole entire time, literally. And I still do it to this day. I literally work and do stuff with the military, do stuff with nonprofit stuff, coach basketball, and I still play to this day. But it's always been that, man. So when you take it and you learn that and you embrace that, everything else becomes second nature. So life for me will always be great. As long as I'm alive, I'm always be good.
As long as you're 6 feet above ground, man, it's a great day.
That's it. Hell, that's it.
Hell yeah. Every day. Now, you're being a recruiter, which, dude, there's one reason I never get recruited in my 26 years, because it sucks. All right? It sucks. I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. I mean, I met – it's cutthroat. In my opinion, it's cutthroat. You're working for salesmen or saleswomen. It's tough. Yeah. No matter – it's one of the things you could be doing the best you can do, like killing it, doing the best, and you have one bad month and you're all of a sudden you're shit.
Yep.
So how can we're talking about inspiration, we're talking about leadership, we're talking about, you know, teamwork. How can we implement that? Let's talk about in recruiting, just because recruiting sucks. How can we implement that? I mean, what do you see what we could do better or as a Navy?
As far as recruiting, man, I feel like the times you have to change with those. You have to change with the times as far as recruiting, because now, so like for me, prior service, it's 10 times harder because I'm in Springfield, Missouri, right? So Springfield, Missouri is not a main military hub at all. I think the closest thing we got is Fort Leonard Wood, which is not even a Navy facility at all.
Right.
So it's 10 times harder here. But as a whole of recruiting period, I feel like if you use the platform of social media, you make things that's more appeasing to the kids and the youth that you're trying to target, I feel like you will gravitate and, you know, they'll gravitate to you and what you're trying to do. Because truth be told, like, you can give out all the bonuses in the world, but most times kids and people are not paying attention to that. Understood.
Yeah.
Because if it's not in the video or TikTok or in the latest song, they're not really like, they're not finna pick up a book and read or look at a flyer and read as much. Right.
Or if it's over 4 or 5 seconds.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's how come a TikTok or whatever the case, little stories last like 10 seconds at best.
Yeah.
And it's out of there. So the attention span is shorter nowadays.
No, 100%. I'm with you, man. It's mm-hmm. I found my attention span shorter because I'm around a bunch of kids all the damn time at the house. It's making me dumber. So I get it. I totally understand. Lazier, not dumber, I guess. But you talked about nonprofits. That's same as plugs. Plug your profits, man.
Nonprofit. So the nonprofit setup that's in this area that I'm a part of, man. So it's called the Ark of the Ozarks, and we should do that non-disclosure too. But
but, do you mean to disclose something? This is not. I suck at it. Jamie's good at it. I suck at it.
Nah. So in this area, man, it's a company that actually helps dual diagnosed individuals. So the spectrum ranges from autistic department area, so they call it Counterpoint. You have residential, where you have the older individuals that kind of like, you know, bedridden, some of them, you know, really need care 24 hours, honestly. And then you have the behavioral part. And then you have the progression part, which that's the part I'm really a part of. And I'm over, you know, homes or whatever for that part of the nonprofit. And so what I do essentially with that part is I ended up getting guys that were high functioning, right, that were working towards gaining their guardianship back, and they were aspiring to have jobs, go to college, and do different things and live on their own, essentially, because for the most part the state funds like homes for or apartments or whatever for the clients to stay in, like with a roommate or maybe two or three roommates or whatever. And then you kind of just try to, like, you know, track data. So we do like logs or whatever every day to make sure like we're tracking how they're progressing or, you know, what we need to work on to help them be more successful. And so I actually worked with guys that actually got underwater. Like, I think he got a welding certificate or degree or whatever. And he's out of the program now. And another guy, he got his guardianship back and he's been working. And another guy got, which I obviously can't say names, but so for HIPAA reasons, right. But I have guys that really like that, that really have been working on jobs and like high functioning. And, it's just a gift, to be able to see like, you know, individuals come from where they came from and the hard times and become successful, man. And it's just been great to be a part of it. And so I've been a part of it now for about 4, maybe 5 years. And that's been my way of giving back.
Does it take you spend a lot of time with it?
So now I don't really have to dedicate as much time as I did before. Like, it was a lot of long hours towards doing it, because, you know, as people grow, the less you have to do now, you know. So, but in the beginning stages, it was a lot of hours. It was a lot of hours and time and work put into it. Now it's kind of like a robot. It kind of works and runs itself. Well-oiled machine. That's awesome. Yeah. But I still put in the time. I still get the late night calls. I might still get the random messages to try to make sure everything is okay.
Awesome, man. Awesome, dude. This has been a great conversation, brother. I've had a blast. And before we wrap up, what can you tell some of us, fellow sailors, civilians, anybody that's you, like, you had a tough, they're struggling. What would you tell them?
Like I said, man, for anybody, right? For the most part, because everybody can relate to this. Every day is not going to be a good day. And as long as you have breath and you're above ground, it's a chance for something great to happen, no matter the situation, because you can lay down and you'll get up, it's a new day. Yeah. That whatever happens, you know, they have the 72-hour rule. At 72 hours, it won't even matter, you know? So I take that to heart, and I've learned to deal with that and to understand that no matter the situation, it can always be worse, and take anything, if you like, premise of if you're deploying, if you're out there and it just sucks, right? Like, sometimes things just suck. Like, it's like you just don't get a break. But understand, in something negative, you can always find a positive. You just got to find it. You got to look in there and find it somewhere, because mentally, as an athlete, I've always found inspiration in the smallest things. Like, if a fan just go to booing me, right? Or say I can't do something. Like, I live weights crazily, right? So I also, as, you know, being a part of all of this and doing all these different things, I branched in with a supplement brand too. So I do all these different things. So, but I've always took a person saying I can't do something as motivation to make sure I can do it, because right. I always like to prove people wrong. So in every negative or anything negative said, done, or endured, you can always come out with something positive. You just got to train your mind to think that way.
You got to dig for that silver lining.
Yeah, always, always. A positive mind, a kill, a negative thought.
That's right. That's right, man. Thanks for coming on. And we're about to close out, but please stick around for a second. I'd like to BS with you.
No worries.
All right, thanks again for listening to the show. And with that, we wish you fair winds and following seas. Hey, blue, 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 blue.